Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of the TF Metals Report website, which we will link to below this interview. Now, Craig, broadly, if we're just recapping what we saw this week in commodities, was another pretty solid week for commodities and the precious metals. One thing that caught my attention was still the solid performance of the large miners and even some of the smaller exploration plays. Some of the smaller juniors were getting a bit more of a buy, some more volume, even on the back of some good news. That's very encouraging to me. It just continues to go down this general theme of slightly more interest coming into the sector and the stocks essentially continuing to outperform, especially in gold and silver. What's your takeaway from this week, Craig, in the markets?
Well, I think it's been very constructive, Corey. A continuation of these trends that we've been watching now, really since the first of the year or late last year. I know you and I have discussed how the markets usually play out in terms of the shares. The big ones move first, and then as price continues higher, then advisors and investors start to dig down to the juniors and further. And yeah, I mean, we've had a really solid turnaround even here on Thursday, which, again, to remind everybody, last trading day of the week, New York Stock Exchange, COMEX, all U.S. Treasury markets, everything, all U.S. markets closed on Friday the 15th for Good Friday. So we're painting the weekly charts here in just a couple of hours. We've seen, you know, even though the metals fell earlier today, which was kind of a HFT nonsense, and that Lagarde had some comments that weakened the euro, and the euro is 60% of the dollar index. And so if the euro goes down, the dollar just goes up in reflex. And then the trading machines to the dollar go up, so they dump their COMEX digital metals, and gold and silver went down. And so the shares opened lower by about 1%, but as we speak with a couple hours ago, they've turned and are now higher. GDXJ's above 51 and almost up 1%. The GDX is going to post its highest weekly close in September of 2020. And the GDXJ, as you said, is finally starting to catch up. Now, it's going to post its highest weekly close since last June, but at least it's starting to catch up. Both now with these closes today look like they'll target about another 10% higher before running into resistance again. You could probably extrapolate that in then to higher metals prices too. If the shares look like they're going up 10%, then maybe that means, you know, gold's got a good 3-4% ahead of it. Silver probably 5-6%. So people can kind of extrapolate that out too. So it's been a very positive week for a number of reasons and a number of things driving it. And not to make it sound like, hey, everything looks great from here, but this is a continuation of some of the trends we're monitoring all year. And so I think things can should continue to look up for us.
Yeah, Craig. And in the face of what many people a year ago would have said are headwinds to the space, like a high dollar over 100 or the Fed hiking rates or the 10-year note up around 2.7%, it's interesting that gold and silver have held their own and continued higher. And we've seen silver outperforming gold, and we've seen the mining stocks outperforming the metals, at least this week and recently, the last couple of weeks. So we're starting to see a more bullish posture for the whole precious metal sector. Do you think that the miners are sniffing out that, you know, there is a little bit more room to run here? Or do you think things are getting a little overextended now because the GDX and GDXJ, to your point, have made pretty good runs already?
Well, they have, but those ETFs themselves are not too overbought on a technical sense yet. And they're kind of, I guess, correctly priced. If I don't know if that's probably not the right word, but relative to where the actual metal is, what's gold spots around 1970 or 75, so having the GDX at 40 or 41 is about where those two were together back in 2020, the last time we're at these levels. And so maybe it's more of a sense of the shares kind of catching up to a realization that metal prices aren't going down. And again, like you said, Chad, a lot of people thought entering this year, oh, yeah, the Fed's going to be hiking 9 times and all this kind of jazz. And who knows? Maybe they will. But, you know, there's a lot of history of gold prices rising with rising interest rates. And so that's kind of a, you know, we've just gotten so used to rates going down and QE and ZERP and NERP and all that kind of stuff. But market history also shows that gold prices rally during periods like this too. And then, you know, we throw one last thing on there. I know we've discussed this before, guys, but in my annual forecast that I wrote back in January, one of the things I focused on was what's called the Chinese credit impulse, which is this notion, kind of a way of measuring whether the Chinese are loosening monetary policy or tightening. And when this credit impulse is rising, that generally means that they're loosening. And that has been the case. So even while the U.S. is discussing tightening, the Chinese are trying to keep their economy afloat and loosening, you know, with all their lockdowns and everything else. And this current massive sell-off in the Japanese yen is also putting pressure on the People's Bank of China to maybe devalue their currency. Anyway, all this adds up to a continued rise in that credit impulse, and that has been positively, tightly correlated with commodity prices in the past. So knowing that that credit impulse was likely to be going up all year long, I thought, well, we're probably going to have a pretty darn good year in commodities. Of course, now that's been exacerbated by the events in Europe and Ukraine and Russia. But nonetheless, that commodity rally continues as well. And that just can't help but bleed over some strength into the metals. And you're seeing that too.
Craig, what was your takeaway from the inflation data that we got this week? 8.5%, another increase on inflation. However, it did come in below estimates that were largely over 10% in the double digits for inflation. Again, we're hearing people say that this could be the peak for inflation, this recent run up that really started a year ago in April. What are your thoughts?
Isn't that funny? Maybe it will be, but I think a lot of the same central bankers and sell-side economists are trying to say that inflation is now peaking or the same ones that 6 months ago said it was transitory, right? So I'm not sure if I'll fall in line with what they think. You know, the other part of it too is that producer prices are now well into the double digits year over year. In fact, some of the worst producer price inflation that we've seen in the U.S. ever. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate into consumer prices. However, the PPI has been leading the CPI for the last 12 months. And I guess you could say that's because if you're a producer, you make things and your input costs are going up, then either your margins get squeezed and you have losses, or you at least attempt to pass those higher costs on to your consumers. So as long as producer prices are rising, that's going to keep inflation from coming down substantially. And, you know, I'll just add one more thing. You know, this notion, I think there's kind of a notion out there that what's going to happen is, we're at 8.5% year over year, and that's going to come down to 2, you know, just like the Fed has always wanted. All these trillions of dollars of cash is what's causing this. And so, maybe, especially with a recession looming, that some of the demand drivers of inflation will cool off, and maybe it'll come down some, but we could still very easily average 4 and 5% inflation going forward. And people think, it's so much better than 8. It's really, wait a second, 4 or 5% inflation is still a huge number, especially when you compound that, you know, annualized for a few years. And so I think we kind of got to keep our eye on the ball in that regard. And then especially as that means, you know, how's that reflects in real interest rates too, because the Fed will never be able to raise rates high enough to turn real interest rates positive. They won't be able to get the Fed funds rate above the inflation rate before they'll be forced to switch course. And all of these events are yet to play out as well. And again, just another positive factor for the metals.
Yeah, Craig, I feel like we've been mentioning that this is exactly how things would play out for a year or two now.
Yeah.
That they would get to the point where everybody realizes they can't normalize the rates, they can't implement the Taylor rule and get the Fed's fund rate, you know, a percentage or two above inflation. And even if inflation comes down, it still means negative real rates for the foreseeable future. So you mentioned the PPI numbers. I think it's an interesting point that these manufacturers either have to take the hit on their margins, which means that's not going to be a great earnings report for those producers, or they have to pass those higher prices along to consumers, which means the consumers are getting hit with more price increases, and they're already getting hit in the food aisle at the grocery store, at the gas pump, for services, for rents, for home, you know, you name it. There's inflation in all areas of life, and it's not just Ukraine, and it's not just supply chain issues. It's because of all that liquidity. Do you think that all this is leading towards that potential of a real serious economic hit in the next year or so, possibly leading towards a recession, as we are hearing the recession term thrown around a lot more, even in the mainstream financial media now.
Yeah, that's right, Shad. On my side, I think I first used the term stagflation in June of 2020. And we've probably discussed this before. You know, I just had the idea that you'd have sent all these people home to work. You know, you're shutting down all these different restaurants and other service jobs that, regardless of, you know, what they say are gains back in employment, the way businesses were going to change their strategy and try to cope with everything that had happened would lead us toward just kind of more stagnant, very slowly growing economy for a number of years. At the same time, you know, trillions of dollars of stimulus are going to lead to inflation. And it certainly looks like, again, we're now finally really on the cusp of, if not already entering into, this kind of stagflationary environment. Again, another very positive time for gold. If you think back to the stagflation of the 1970s, you know, where you had sharply negative real interest rates and all the other things that went with it, and what gold went from about $100 in 1976 to 800 something, $900 by early 1980. Nah, I don't think we're going to go up ninefold from here. Be fine with me if we did. Probably everybody listening to us think that's just dandy. But I just give you that kind of historical analogy. I mean, these are all typically, you know, just positives for gold. So when people, you know, in the mainstream or your stockbroker sit there and says, yeah, I think gold, I read this report from UBS. It says it's going to 1700. Okay. But I would suggest maybe the opposite is the case, that all of these macro factors are why gold has not continued to fall here this year and instead moving higher, because there's just kind of a realization that it has all these different things going for it. And then you just throw on the safety factor of it, you know, the fact that physical metal doesn't have any counterparty risk, all the other crazy things going on in the world, helping demand for gold, even at the central bank level. Yeah, I think it remains well bid. And so, it kind of leaves us in this still rather early stages of what's a pretty strong bull move.
So, Craig, if we take a step back and understand, this year especially has been a very headline-driven market. However, some of the recent headlines, they've changed. We were really trading off of the war in Ukraine, which now that war, even though it is still ongoing, is seeming to have less of an impact day over day, week over week on these markets. The inflation number, while it did come in lower than estimates, we didn't see huge volatility on the back of that. What do you think is important to watch in terms of future headlines that should drive these markets or could drive these markets, getting us back into that volatile nature of, depending on what the headline says, that could drive the markets?
You know, Corey, I think the biggest risk, not in the very short term, but it would be a short-term risk, for the gold price, you know, is determined largely through futures trading. And, you know, the Fed came out, I think it was just earlier this week, maybe back on Monday or it was last Friday. It wasn't the Fed, but it was Bill Dudley, who was, you know, former head of the New York Fed. So, I mean, this is a pretty important guy. Of course, now he works for Goldman Sachs. That shouldn't surprise anybody. But anyway, old Dudley came out and said the Fed wants to break the stock market, that they are serious. They are not jacking around. They're so concerned about inflation, finally, that they wanted, and they know their tools are limited, so they want to work on the demand side of things. And what, in Dudley's words, he said he talked about what he called a reverse wealth effect, which, if you remember, the term wealth effect was something that came up by Greenspan, who thought that, you know, if you could get the stock market to go up month over month and quarter after quarter, that people would get their statements in the mail showing how much more life savings they had and how great things were going, they might be more apt to go out and buy a new refrigerator. Well, what Dudley's talking about is reverse of that. If the Fed could break the stock market and drive it lower by 20%, the people would feel more poor, and thus the demand for goods would drop off, and then the supply chain could catch up and inflation would come down. This is the calculus that they're trying to employ. Now, the idea that the Fed would like you more poor, notwithstanding, that's probably, you know, something that we can fill a whole call in with that. I think with Dudley, you know the old adage, don't fight the Fed. If they're telling you that the Fed is just going to keep raising in the hope of breaking the stock market, well, hell's bells, maybe we ought to take them seriously. So back to where I started with this, that would be a kind of a short term, not like in the short term for the next week, but it would be the impact would be short, is that if the stock market were to crack like it did in late 2018 and plunge, really, the whole move was 20%, but it was about 10% in December of 18 alone, that you could get kind of a global margin call again, is what I'm getting at, you know, where there's such a liquidity issue and the stock market's, you know, falling a couple of percent every day, that then everything that isn't nailed down starts getting sold and, you know, futures positions start getting liquidated and you get this, you know, sharp downdraft in the metals. Again, that I don't think would hold long, because you'd be on the verge of, you know, some kind of Powell pivot again. But I think that's maybe the biggest risk that I see to the trend, is that at some point it takes hold that the Fed wants to break the market and the market sells off and then it takes everything with it.
Yeah, Craig, I'm not sure good old Bill Dudley's going to win a lot of friends with his line of he wants to inflict more losses on the stock market was what he literally said. But the other thing is the housing market, you know, with interest rates going up and with, you know, the Fed's fund rate going up and two more 50 basis point hikes slated for May and for June. It's going to be interesting to see if the real estate market cools off, which would also eat into that wealth effect that people feel. If your house prices starts going down in value instead of up, because people are under the impression real estate can only go up in value. But as we know from the great financial crisis, that's simply not true. And there is a time where what goes up must come down. So if we see the wealth effect hit on both fronts, the stock market and with real estate, it could create that liquidity event. My question is, do you think the precious metals in that environment could keep decoupling like they have been this year? Because the markets have been under pressure this year while the precious metal sector kind of diverged from that, and it kind of held its ground a lot better and was up a lot of days the general market's down. Do you think if it happened a little more gradually instead of like sudden and shocking, that the precious metal sector could diverge from the general markets and that maybe the impetus to get gold to those higher prices is maybe a little bit more carnage in corporate America and in the general stock markets?
Yeah, that could be, Shad. And I think that's a little bit of why the stock market hasn't gone down yet. Because, we're talking about 200 basis points of Fed fund hikes still to come this year is a projection. But now, like, three rate cuts in 2023 is the assumption. You know, the Fed's going to hike, roll into recession, and then maybe they're only hiking just so they can cut again. And so, you know, some say that stock market, the only reason it's hanging in there is because it's focusing a year forward on the rate cuts that are coming. Gold, I don't know. Maybe that's what gold's starting to focus on, too. The way it's moved up, you know, pretty consistently the past month or so. And again, taking the shares with it for the past 2 months. So that would probably, I guess, be the answer, I think, to your question, is it just depends on how forward looking gold would be, just silver for that matter, too, as that plays out. I don't know. If the stock market doesn't crash, then maybe Powell doesn't feel the need to pivot. And then maybe you don't get the rate cuts next year, and then the stock market does crash. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But in the interim, so many forces are aligned at this point to make gold and silver look pretty good in the miners too, that I'll try to keep focusing maybe on that bigger picture, I suppose.
All right, Craig, we'll wrap it up here. I hope you have a great Easter long weekend, and we'll be chatting next week. So let's hope that this trend continues. I know it's not great for everybody out there, but for the precious metals investors that have waited a long time for this sort of environment, it is here. So let's see just how high these metals can run. Craig, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. Have a great long weekend.
All right. Thanks, guys.